Part 26. Stephen. Chapter 50. Bell is behind the wheel of the borrowed Jeep Compass. As they pass the dark track that leads to Fox Creek, Stephen peers through the trees. He hopes that the man who calls himself Prophet and those who've gone to his aid can hold the intruders at the old cabin long enough for Bell to get the Jeep clear of interference. If they make it to the other side of the border, he believes they'll be safe. Lou Morisseau lies across the back seat. Stephen and Bell talk little. It's been a journey, one that has brought more than its share of challenges. Still, sitting next to Bell, studying her face in the glow from the dashboard, Stephen knows that he wouldn't trade this day or the two before it for anything. He's never met a more remarkable woman. They hit the junction of the Trans-Canada Highway and drive west a dozen miles. At the turnoff for East Braintree, they head south and are on the Serpentine Road back toward Minnesota. Stephen finally allows himself to breathe freely. Near the border, Bell slows and finds the turnoff to the back road they followed when they crossed into Canada illegally that afternoon.
"Wait," Stephen says. "Tanya knows about this road. They might be watching it."
"There's another,"
Lou says weakly from the back seat.
"In fact, several. If you can get Anton on the phone, if they've left the reserve, he may have service by now. Let him know we're taking the Bog Road."
"The Bog Road?" Bell repeats.
"Just tell him. He'll know what it means."
Bell tries the call, connects, and because of the concern about their calls being monitored, she simply says, "Bog Road?" Anton replies, 10-4. When the call is ended, Lou says,
"Turn around."
They backtrack a couple of miles, and Lou directs Bell onto a dirt lane that heads west into thick woods. They follow the lane another mile and turn south along vague tire tracks down a narrow passage as ill-defined as the one that led to the cabin on Fox Creek.
"There are bogs everywhere, Bell. Take it slow," Lou says.
"One misstep and we could end up sinking out of sight." For the next hour, they proceed at a snail's pace. The road snakes through marshland. In places, the trees and underbrush crowd against the Jeep so close that the branches scrape along the sides of the vehicle with sounds like fingernails dragged across blackboards. Whenever Bell is in doubt about the way, Lou lifts himself up from where he lies and guides her.
"Watch it, Bell,"
Stephen barks. She breaks immediately and just in time. She was about to plunge the Jeep into a black morass. She draws a deep breath.
"I think I'd rather take my chances with a border patrol."
"You're doing fine, sis," Lou says.
"Just keep it slow and easy."
Bell cuts hard to the right, following a track barely discernible in the headlights. They proceed another 100 yards and are again moving down a tight corridor lined with trees when their way is blocked by a fallen log.
"Damn," Lou says.
Stephen hears the absolute exhaustion in his voice, as if this is the final blow.
"Relax, we'll clear it,"
Stephen assures him.
"Come on, Bell."
It's a tamarack, a bog tree, long dead. In the Jeep headlights, Stephen can see where the trunk has rotted out near the base, and a strong wind must finally have toppled it.
"We'll never move this thing," Bell says. "We need a chainsaw. Let's see what's in the Jeep."
In the cargo space, they find an assortment of tools, a hatchet among them.
"Better than nothing," Stephen says. "It'll take hours to hack through the tree trunk."
"Lou?"
She looks toward the rear seat, but her brother has once again laid himself down.
"Do you have a better suggestion?" Stephen says quietly.
Bell shakes her head.
"Then let's get to it."
Stephen has seen sharper edges on a butter knife.
The blade cuts poorly into the wood. He hacks away until his arm feels ready to drop off, then Bell takes over. For nearly an hour, they work at the cutting, taking turns. They've almost hacked through when Stephen stops, his arm raised high for the next blow. He slowly lowers the hatchet.
"What is it?" Bell asks.
"Listen."
She cocks her head, then says,
"Oh, God, no."
It's the whack, whack, whack of helicopter blades nearing.
"There," Stephen says, and points back the way they've come.
A few hundred yards behind them, a searchlight is probing the narrow track they've followed.
"Kill the headlights, Bell," Stephen says.
She rushes to the jeep and the headlights die. Stephen joins her.
"What is it?"
Lou asks as he lifts himself slowly in the rear seat.
"A helicopter," Bell says, "looking for us."
"How far to the border?" Stephen asks.
"I don't know."
Lou sounds like a man ready for the grave. "I'm not sure where we are now."
"If we can just make it to the border," Bell begins.
Lou shakes his head.
"The border's not going to stop these people. You two go on. Make sure that thumb drive gets into the right hands."
"What about you?"
"I'll stay with the jeep. Delay them as long as I can."
"You're in no condition," Bell begins.
"Just do it.
What's in there is more important. I've worked too hard to have it all fall apart now. Stay on this track through the bogs and you'll come to a road eventually, dirt but a real one. It'll cut east, connect you to the main highway into Roseau."
"Lou,"
Bell tries again,
"for God's sake, just go."
"He's right, Bell," Stephen says. "We need to move."
"Turn the headlights back on,"
Lou says. Stephen gives him a questioning look.
"A moth to flame? I want to draw them to me."
Stephen turns on the headlights, leaves the jeep, and makes his way over the fallen tamarack, Bell following behind. The night is dark, moonless. They both use the flashlight apps on their cell phones to see their way. Stephen hopes that Lou's right, and the headlights will be what the chopper zeroes in on. They hurry, jogging, glancing back often. They see the spotlight sweeping, sweeping. Then it pauses.
"They've got him,"
Bell says and stops running.
"We can't help him," Stephen tells her. "If you love him, you'll do as he asks. Get these documents into the right hands."
He can hear her sobs as she turns, and they start again together, heading away at a run.